Masechet Rosh Hashanah, Daf Yud Tet. Two topics today. First, we're going to continue our discussion about Megillat Ta'anit, and then we're going to continue with the Mishnah, which talks about sending out messengers on different months of the year to let the people all over Israel know when the calendar is, when Rosh Chodesh was. So back to Megillat Ta'anit. This was ancient work. Maybe the only Pharisaic work we have, the earliest work of Torah Shebaal Peh. It lists 35 happy days when various happy things happen to the people of Israel. Some of them have to do with victories over the Romans. Most of them have to do with victories of the Hashmonaim. Not only Chanukah, which that's the famous one, is in Ta'anit. Purim is also in Ta'anit. But other victories before Chanukah and other things that happen afterwards, all related to victories over the Greeks and the glory of the Hashmonaim and other associated things are mentioned. So these are happy days in which one may not fast. Okay, good. So now the question is, these dates are not in effect anymore, except for Chanukah and Purim that we still do. The other dates we can fast on. If someone dies on such a day, we can make a eulogy. So the question is, when did this happen? We saw two opinions. Rav and Rabbi Chanina says Megillat Ta'anit is no longer in effect. And he associates it with the fast days. Just like in the times of the Beit HaMikdash, the fast days, the four minor fasts, were actually happy days. And so too, we celebrated the days of Megillat Ta'anit. However, once the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, and now it's Som, these are days of the 4 days are days of fasting, so we're sad. And so also, these dates of Megillat Ta'anit now are no longer celebrated as happy days. So in other words, we do not follow Batla Megillat Ta'anit. That's Rav and Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yosha ben Levi, on the other hand, says, no, it has not been nullified. Because it's independent of the Beit HaMikdash. It's true, the fast days changed from happy days to now fast days, but Megillat Ta'anit, those days are still happy, and so we still cannot mourn on those days. Oh, so that seems to be a fundamental machloket, and we are going to question the first opinion of Rav and Rabbi Chanina from three dates. We already saw the challenge from Chanukah, because after all, we do celebrate Chanukah, and even in the times of the Tanaim, where it sounds like there was one group of people that wanted to make a fast day on Chanukah, maybe for rain. But the sages, two sages got up and said, no, you're not allowed to fast. So they upheld Chanukah. And these sages are Tanaim after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. And nevertheless, they're following it. So doesn't that mean that Megillat Ta'anit is still in effect, since they said no fasting on Chanukah? And our answer to that is Chanukah is an exception. Chanukah has mitzvot connected to it, and the mitzvot of lighting the Chanukah and saying Hallel are associated with wonderful miracles that everybody knows and have been publicized. The other items on the list are also miracles, but nobody knows about them. And so once everyone knows about them, so they become part of the historical record, the historical memory of popular understanding, and therefore you can't nullify Chanukah and Purim. Don't say Purim, but that would apply also. However, the other ones were. So that's how we answered the challenge from Chanukah. And we're going to see now two more challenges from the 3rd of Tishrei and the 28th of Adar to the opinion that Megillat Ta'anit was in fact nullified. So let's see. We begin here. Motiv Rav Acha bar Huna. Bitlata b'tishrei betelat adkarta min shetaraya. Okay, see, this is the Aramaic part. This is the oldest part of the Megillat Ta'anit that just lists the date on the 3rd of Tishrei and lists a very short description that says the mention of God's name in shtarot, in legal documents, was abolished. Okay, that doesn't tell us much. So we need the fuller story. And here is the add-on, which is in Hebrew. This is a later layer that's a commentary on the earlier Aramaic later. So this says Shegazra Malchut Yavan Gezerah Shelo Laskir Shem Shamayim Al Pihem. Originally, during the persecutions before Chanukah, the Hellenistic Empire made a Gezerah that one may not mention God's name. Can't say it, and you can't write it. They can't say it. Ukshegavra Malchut Chashmonai V'Nisechu B'Itkinu Shiyu Maskirin Shem Shamayim Afilu B'Shtarot. And when the Hashmonaim won on Chanukah and beat them, so they made a takana that since now we can say God's name, we want to celebrate it. And they said, you have to add in Hashem's name in all documents. So not only were they so happy that now they had their own own Kohen Gadol, eventually king, Yochanan, and they can count the years to their own ruler, they would add in Kohen Gadol le'el Alyon to show off, be proud that now they can mention Hashem's name once again. So this seems like it would be a good and happy thing. That's not the happy day, actually. It's the opposite. This is really ironic. When the sages heard about that, they said, this is not a good idea. You did not consult with us because you're going to write a loan document and you're going to put Hashem's name in there. And then eventually the person will pay back. When you pay back a loan, the person gives back the loan document and they tear it up so that you wouldn't use it again, like a check that's been cleared. And now, what are you going to do? You're going to have this Hashem's name on it. You tore it up and you threw it in the garbage. And they're not careful. Since it's just a business document, they're not going to be careful to put it in Geniza. And so they said, this is a bad idea. And eventually, they nullified the Hasmonean decree. So this is interesting. The day that the sages nullified the Hasmonean decree, which was itself a celebration of nullifying the Hellenistic decree, that day was a holiday. And it's the sages that made it a holiday when they overturned the Hasmoneans. You see, the source already just in itself shows some of the tension between the Hashmonaim and the Chachamim, that they didn't always see eye to eye. So right now we're assuming that this story, when the Chachamim were finally able to overpower and nullify it, must have happened after the Beit HaMikdash. I mean, it doesn't actually give a year. But assuming it's after the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, so if, according to you, Rav and Rabbi Chanina, you said that the entire Megillat Tanit was nullified after the Beit HaMikdash. If the whole thing was nullified, Kamaita Betul, then would you have to go and now add another date? You wouldn't nullify the whole document, all 34 dates, and then say, oh, wait, we want to add a date to a nullified document. That wouldn't make any sense. So it only makes sense if, in fact, the Megillat Tanit was still in force after the destruction. And then they said, oh, we want to add another happy day to the list. Okay, that's a good question. However, the question is built on the assumption that this happened after the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. So we say, no, maybe not. Hachab Maizkinan, Bizman She Beit HaMikdash Kayam. It could be when the Beit HaMikdash was up. Remember, the Hashmonaim were all really only in power for less than 100 years. And so after any time after 63 BCE, when the Romans came in and the Hashmonaim were pretty much gone, so the Chachamim would have had more power and they could have nullified it way before the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, 130 years between. Okay, so it would make sense. And in fact, it was during the Beit HaMikdash. However, another question on this. The date that we're talking about is the 3rd of Tishrei. So that's the date that they, the sages were able to say, don't write God's name in the shtar. Well, it happens to be also what we call Som Gedaliah. And so while it's a fast day for us, in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, it was a happy day. So it's already a happy day and there's no mourning and eulogizing. So then why would you have to bother adding it to the list if it's already a happy day? Rav said, it's in order to say that not only the third, but even the second of Tishrei also one may not fast. We're going to see in a second that all the dates in Megillat Ta'anit, all 35 dates, the rabbi said, don't fast on that day, also the day before and the day after, because they want to give extra strength to it. We have a remnant of this today where for most days, if there's any day we don't say Tachanun, already Mincha, the day before, we also don't say Tachanun. We want to add on to it to strengthen so people don't forget that day. So therefore, Rav says, yes, it's true. Even though it was already a happy day of Som Gedaliah, nevertheless, they added on this secondary reason of the nullification of the of writing God's name in the Shtarot in order to add that it will also be prohibited the day before. Good. Now, we ask, hold on, the second day of Tishrei happens to be also a day after Rosh Chodesh. And assuming that Rosh Chodesh is a happy day, it is. Rosh Chodesh is a happy day. No mourning on Rosh Chodesh, eulogizing. And so that also you would have the rule that a day before and a day after. So we have a day after Rosh Chodesh. That would also be Bet Tishrei. And so that was already prohibited in mourning. So we wouldn't need to add yet another day of this Gimel Tishrei. So we answer Rosh Chodesh Deoraita. Deoraita la ba'ech izuk. Rosh Chodesh is a happy day mid-deoraita. And therefore, deoraita days are only prohibited from fasting for one day, that very day. Because deoraita days are strong in and of themselves. We don't have to add more strength to them. Whereas something that is only the mid-rabanan, all the things in Megillat Tanit, those do need strengthening. And that's why only those are prohibited on the day before and day after. So the rabbis had to add the date of Gimel Tishrei in order to prohibit mourning on the second of Tishrei as well. Incidentally, we mentioned Rosh Chodesh. It happens to also be Rosh Hashanah, but that's in addition, so we could have said that too. But it is, in fact, also Rosh Chodesh. Okay, De Tanya, and now we're just going to show that this proof that the words of Torah do not require a reinforcement because they're strong in and of themselves. De Tanya Hayamim Ela Ketubim Megillat Esther Asurin Ben Lifnehen Ben Acharehem. This is a Braita that says all the 35 dates, including Megillat Tanit, you're not allowed to fast and eulogize the day before and the day after. However, Shabbatot Yom Tovim, Hem Asurim Lifnei Macharim Mutarim. When it comes to Deoraita holidays like Shabbat and Yom Tov, only that day itself one may not fast, but the day before it and after it would be permitted to fast. Ma Hefresh Ben Zeh LaZeh? Why? What's the difference? Halalu Divrei Torah, Ben Divrei Torah Sirichin Chizuk. Halalu Divrei Sofrim, V'Divrei Sofrim Sirichim Chizuk. Because Shabbat and Yom Tov and Rosh Chodesh are from the Torah, and they don't need any strengthening. Everyone is careful from them, whereas the words of the Sofrim, of the Rabbanan, people may come to take them light. Oh, it's only a Sumed Rabbanan, so I'll eulogize. I want to eulogize. So that's why they need extra chizuk, and it is prohibited the day before and the day after. Okay, so far so good. One last question on this. This day, during the time of the Beit HaMikdash, Shom Gedaliah was a happy day, and that fast is not in the Torah, so it's a derabanan, it's midivrei sofrim. And so that itself would require no fasting the day before and the day after. So even without the Gimel Tishrei regarding God's name in Shtarot, even if the rabbis didn't do that, they would already be prohibited from mourning on Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Tishrei, and Dalet Tishrei, all the days surrounding Som Gedaliah, which is now the happy day of Som Gedaliah. So therefore, adding Gimel Tishrei doesn't affect anything. So that's the last question and the last answer. Amar Rav Asher, Gedaliah ben Achikam, Divrei Kabbalah hu, v'divrei Kabbalah kidivrei Torah damu. This is true. The Som Gedaliah is not in the Torah, so it's not a Doraita, but it is in the Nevi'im. And therefore, Divrei Kabbalah, any words of Nevi'im, people also take that seriously, and you don't have to add days before and after. And so therefore, beforehand, the Aleph Tishrei was happy day because Rosh Chodesh and Rosh Hashanah. Gimel Tishrei was happy day because it was the Som Gedaliah during the time of the Beit HaMikdash. And then the rabbis came and said, oh, look, an extra happy thing happened today on Gimel Tishrei. We'll add it on the calendar, no fasting, so that you'll know. Also on Bet and Dalet, no fasting either. Okay, so we resolved that. And now to the last challenge, to the opinions of Rav and Rabbi Chanina, who said that we no longer observe the happy days of Megillat Tanit. Here's the question. Metiv Rav Tovi Bar Matana Basimut Manaya Be Achat Besorata Tabtal Yehuda'e Delayi Aydun Me'oraita. On the 28th, it doesn't say what the month is, you have to look in the context because there's already a few happy days in Adar before that. So this is the 28th of Adar. Good tidings came to the Jews that they do not have to turn away from the Torah. That's the Aramaic part. That's the early layer of Megillat Tanit itself. And now here is the later Hebrew commentary. Usually, when we have a Mishnah, Mishnah is in Hebrew, the Gemara is a commentary in Aramaic. Megillat Tanit is the opposite. The earliest layer is Aramaic. The explanation is in Hebrew. Shegazra malchut harishaa, gezerah shelo yasku batorah. Originally, the evil kingdom, probably the Hellenists, said that you're not allowed to learn Torah. Veshelo yamul et b'nehem. They said no circumcision. Shechalut shabbatot, and you must violate Shabbat. Me'asa Yehuda ben Shamua v'chaverav. So this Yehuda ben Shamua, notice he's not mentioned as a rabbi, not a Biyuda ben Shamua, which would indicate that he's an early sage before like the Zugot and Hillel and Shammai. Anyone before Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai did not yet have the title of a Rabbi. So anyway, this sage and his friends, what did they do? Halchu v'natlu esami matzronita ahad shekol gidolei Romi mesuyin esla. They went to a certain Roman matron, an important woman, who was friendly to them. And, you know, I respected the Jews and all the good. She was respected by the great nobles of Rome. And they went and asked her advice. She said, come and you should cry out. Modern Hebrew hafgana is a protest, right? When you protest in front of the prime minister's house, hafgana. So they said, we should make a protest. This is a, I don't know, one of the earliest recorded actual protests, at least among the Jews. Halchu v'ifginu balayla amru, isha mayim lo achechem anachnu, v'lo b'nei av echad anachnu, v'lo b'nei em achat anachnu. And this is amazing that we have this. So, you know, on their picket signs, they're writing, heaven, are we Jews, not your brothers? Aren't we all children of one father? Aren't we all children of one mother? We're all human beings, aren't we? How are we different from anybody else, any other nations that are under minorities that are under the Roman Empire, that only us you make these terrible decrees? Okay, this must have happened during Roman times because it mentions Rome. And so during some war against the Romans, maybe the Great Revolt or some persecution. And so this ubitilom, and it worked. Their protest worked, and the Roman government said, okay, fine. Okay, this phrasing is really interesting because they're appealing to the Romans' universalistic sensibility. They were like, you know, big liberals, not exactly, but the Romans, you know, they prided themselves in saying, everybody's human, everybody, you know, equal treatment. And yet they said, well, you know, we're also human beings, right? So this same idea was actually used as by anti-Semites. They would say, everybody's a human being. Why do you have to be different, you Jews? Right? Why do you have to look different? Why do you have to eat things that are different? And so on. So that was used against them. But here it's being used for their case and saying, well, if we're all the same, then you should allow us to live in peace and not pick on us and make a gezerot. And so it worked. And here's the question. If you think that the Megillat Tanit was all nullified already, so the original ones were already nullified, in other words, the whole Megillat Tanit was nullified, would the rabbis come? So now this is assuming that this is after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. Okay, this would make sense if this is part of the Hadrianic persecutions. At the time of the Bar Kokhba revolt in 130s. So this would be right way after the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. And if so, since the whole Megillat Tanit was already gone, then it wouldn't make any sense to add another date to the calendar. So it must be that Megillat Tanit was still in force. And in this case, and if you're going to tell me that this is some kind of persecution and victory when the Beit HaMikdash was up, we see this Yehuda ben Shamua, who was mentioned, he's the one that goes to the Roman matron, and he was a student of Rabbi Meir who lived After he's after the Bar Kokhba revolt, even a student of Meir, who was himself a student of Rabbi Akiva, Ditnan. And how do we know that he's a student? Amar ben Shimon ben Gamliel, Yehuda ben Shamua metameh mishum Rabbi Meir. So there's a Mishnah regarding some case of a vessel made out of glass that holes in it, and then you filled up the holes with lead. So the question is this a utensil or not? If it's a utensil, it can be mekabel, it's susceptible to receiving tumah. The question is, since it has holes in it, maybe then you'll say it's not a vessel anymore, it can't hold anything, and you're just kind of patched it up. Or you say, no, now it's a vessel with these lead, and now it's a whole thing. And so it is a vessel. And so this was the subject of a machloket. And the Yudam Ben Shemua says it is Tameh, it is considered a vessel, and he said in the name of Rabbi Meir. So therefore you see, Hachamim Metaharin. Hachamim say it's okay. So the point is that we see that this story must have happened, in fact, after the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. And even though I said before that Yehuda ben Shamua doesn't have a title rabbi, and so that does suggest that he's early. So, you know, makes me wonder, is there more than one sage with this name? I'm not sure. Okay, but in any case, this would then seem to be after the destruction of Beit HaMikdash, and that would suggest that the Megillat Tanit was still in force. And that's why they came and they said, oh, let's add another day. And this is a serious question to Rav and Rabbi Chanina. So finally, we say, you know what? In fact, we cannot reconcile all of these cases with both opinions. Instead, we're going to turn to see and say, Tana'ehi. In fact, this machloket between the Amoraim, the Rav and Rabbi Chanina, and Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi on the other side, these early Amoraim are actually continuing a machloket about this that was already started in the times of the Tanaim themselves, which is quite amazing that even in times of the Tanaim, there was a machloket about whether we should continue or not these dates, these happy dates. Rabbi Meir says that these dates continue to be happy days, no mourning on all these 35 days during the Beit HaMikdash, and even after the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, they are still happy days and therefore prohibited. Okay, amazing. Rabbi Yosef Omer, Yizman Shebeit HaMikdash Kayam Asurin, Mipnei Shesimcha Hilahem, En Beit HaMikdash Kayam Mutarin, Mipnei She'ebel Hulahem. Rabbi Yosef disagrees and says, no, only when the Beit HaMikdash was up, then these were happy days and you can't fast on them. Because they're happy days. But when there's no Beit HaMikdash, this is such a terrible tragedy. So now, after this terrible tragedy, now we're going to continue. We're going to celebrate some things that happened, of victories of old against the Hasmoneans and Romans. And now all those benefits are gone anyway. So it's a time of mourning, and therefore they are nullified. Okay, so a really fundamental machloket. What's the bottom line? Vilcheta batlu, vilcheta lo batlu. Well, the bottom line, we have two statements. One says they are nullified. One says they are not nullified. Like, we can't get to the bottom of this, so we keep going. But we now, here's the resolution. Kasha hilcheta hilcheta. How can you say that halacha is they're nullified? And halacha is that they're still in force. La kasha kan b'chanukah purim kan b'shar yomeh. Answer is that we continue them. That refers to Chanukah and Purim. Those originally were happy days because they were in Megillat Tanit. Those took on a life of their own. They're very important. They have mitzvot connected to them. They became popular in everyone's understanding and memory. And these miracles, since everyone knows them and everyone loves these holidays, they continue. But the other holidays, that the sages did away with. Okay, so this is the end of this discussion. To add one more necessary remark is that the part of the motivation of the sages, and maybe this is underlying some of the machloket here, to nullify these dates is because these dates glorify the Hashmonaim. And there's a lot of reasons why to think that many, even most of the rabbis of the Talmud, did not want to over-glorify the successes of the Hashmonaim, because they were military successes. And first of all, eventually the Hashmonaim themselves became corrupt after the second generation. And more importantly, they represented a rebellion against the government. And they were successful, which was fantastic. But then that was tried twice against the Romans with a terrible failure. But there were still people that said, let's continue, let's try again, let's fight against the Romans. And, you know, that would be even more devastating. And the rabbis were realists, and they said, there's no way we can beat the Romans. We have to just wait it out. Eventually, the Romans will be gone, and we'll have a chance to come back. It might take 100 years. It might take 2,000 years. It's all right. We're patient people. And so, therefore, the rabbis did not want to glorify rebellion. And therefore, they said these dates that everyone, if we're going to keep remembering them and celebrating dates on which we beat out the Greeks and beat out the Romans, then people are going to want to do it again. And so therefore, yeah, Chanukah and Purim, remember those. Chanukah, we focus on the miracle of the oil, and we barely mention the military victory. And by nullifying them, that way we can just focus on spiritual matters, be in a state of mourning. We remember Jerusalem, of course, but we're not going to take an active role right now in trying to get it back. So that may be underlying the, you know, this political question, maybe a military question, maybe underlying this machloket that we saw about should they be enforced or nullified. All right, all very fascinating. And now we get back to the Mishnah al Elul. So there were 6 months during the year in which the Bet Din, after they established which day is Rosh Chodesh, they would send messengers out so that the people all around Israel would know. And they sent in Elul so that you know when Rosh Hashanah is, because you can't, it's too late to send on Rosh Hashanah itself. So you got to send in the earlier month, and then they'd count 29 days. The 30th day will be Rosh Hashanah. And they would also send on in Tishrei so that they would know when Yom Kippur and Sukkot are. So now the question is, if you already sent out in Elul, and because you have a presumption that Elul is 29 days, and then now you're going to know when Rosh Hashanah is. So then you know when Rosh Hashanah is. If you know that, then you automatically know Yom Kippur is 10 days later, Sukkot is 15 days later. So why would you have to send during Tishrei? That's a good question. And maybe you'll say, well, maybe Elul ended up becoming 30 days, and the 31st day was Rosh Hashanah. We have a statement in the name of Rav that from the time of Ezra and forward, which is probably though the earliest historical records they had at the time. It says, we never found that Elul was me'obad, was pregnant, meaning that it was 30 days. It's always 29 days. So it never happened. So we don't have to worry about it. Okay. So Elul Masinu. So therefore, again, why would you have to send out in Tishrei? Because we know that Elul is always 29 days. Look at the language. It says, we never found that it's necessary, right? Because every time we checked, the witnesses came and said, yeah, it's only 29 days. But theoretically, it's possible that next year could be different. And when witnesses may come and they may say that Elul is in fact 30 days. And then Rosh Hashanah will be the next day after that. And you're going to have to know Yom Kippur and Tishrei will be a day pushed a day forwards. And so even though it never happened before, it could happen. Now, HaMekelkel Rosh Hashanah. Wait a second. If such a thing happens, then that would mean that the people that are in Israel outside of Jerusalem will have celebrated the wrong day for Rosh Hashanah, because we sent out messengers on Rosh Chodesh Elul. And they said, listen, count 29 days, the next day, the 30th day, that'll be Rosh Hashanah. So up in Yafo, they're doing Rosh Hashanah on the 30th day. Meantime, in Jerusalem, the witnesses came on the 30th day and say, no, it's not that today, right? Tomorrow's going to be it. Which means Rosh Hashanah was on the 31st day. And so then they send messengers out again and say, oh, one day later. Well, then everyone else will have celebrated Rosh Hashanah on the wrong day. So why? That's not good. But the answer is Mutaf tikalkel Rosh Hashanah v'lo tikalkelu kulhom ma'adot. Okay, better that they only get Rosh Hashanah wrong and not also get Yom Kippur and Sukkot wrong, So that's what we send messengers again. Most of the time, right, 99.9% of the time, they'll have Rosh Hashanah right. But just in case not, nevertheless, we should get the right day for the rest of the month. And in fact, that's exactly what the Mishnah says in saying for Tishrei, we want to establish the correct day for the festivals for Yom Kippur and Shemini Aser and Sukkot. And so that's why we send in Elul and in Tishrei. All right, and now next one. Now, Purim. Now, our Mishnah only mentions that you send out messengers six times a year. Now, what if there's two Adars? What if you do a leap year and add a month? The Mishnah did not add a line and say that if there's an extra Adar, then you should also send out messengers for the second Adar because of Purim. Usually when there's two Adars, we celebrate Purim in the second Adar. It doesn't say that. So that's interesting. How come our Mishnah doesn't say that? Must be Matitin de lo kerebi. Our Mishnah does not follow Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. Even though Rabbi Yehuda Nasi is the compiler of the Mishnah, he compiled sometimes opinions that he himself did not agree with. And this would be one of them. Because in the Braita, Rabbi says that if we add an extra Adar to the year, then they should go out. We should send messengers, an Adar Rishon as usual, and an Adar Sheni, because that is Purim. Adar Rishon, we already sent them out. So, and you never know when you're going to add the next month. They don't have it in the calendar. They might decide in the middle of Adar to say, oh, look, the crops aren't ready yet. We got to add another month. And then they would add Adar Sheni. Well, you got to send out messengers in Adar Sheni. So the B says that. Our Mishnah doesn't say that. Must be our Mishnah is not the opinion of the B. Or Lema v'hakami palge. No, maybe not. Maybe everyone agrees. Maybe they are arguing on something else. Demor. Sabar. Kol misvot anoagim basheni nohagot barishon. Omor savar. Okay, no, we're still going with this to the B. Our Mishnah is not the B. And what's that? The essence of their machloket. How come the B says to send out messengers and our Mishnah says, no, only send out messengers on the first of Adar. You don't have to bother on the second of Adar. What's the essence? Must be they're arguing on the following, that the our Mishnah thinks that all mitzvot of Adar that would that you normally would do in the second, you are observed in the first. In other words, even though you should normally do them in the second, if you did them in the first and you read the special Torah readings and read Megillah and celebrated Purim in the first Adar, it's okay. So you could do it in the first. Since you do it in the first, so you don't need to send messengers in the second. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda Nasi says, no, the mitzvot that are done in the second have to be done. If you do them in the first, it's no good. Okay. In general, incidentally, when we add an extra month, which one is the real Adar? The real Adar is Adar Sheni. The added month is Adar Rishon. Okay. So that's why the second opinion, the Nabi says you have to send messengers because you can only celebrate Purim and the other associated mitzvot in the second Adar. And so that's why you have to send messengers. So that's one way of interpreting explaining our Mishnah as opposed to that Braita. But now we have offer a different explanation. Lo dekula alma misvot anohagot basheni and nohagot barishon. No, in fact, everyone agrees that you have to do Purim and all the mitzvot in second Adar. You can't do them in first Adar. So therefore, really, you would need to send out the messengers. V'hacha be'ibur shana kami palge detanya kama ibur shana sheloshim yom. And the question is, when you add the extra month, which is Adar Rishon, how long is that extra month? Is it a 29-day month or a 30-day month? And so the Tanakhama here says, 30 days, always 30 days. And Rashbag says, Hodesh. We'll see what that means. So what does that mean, Hodesh? Okay, but in the meantime, the point is that Rabbi Yehuda Nasi follows Rashbag, that it's not a fixed number of days. Whereas our Mishnah would follow the first Tanakhama that says it's always 30 days. since it's always 30 days, so, and if I send messengers out for the first Adad, just add 30 days, and I know automatically when the second Adad is. So I don't need to send messengers again. Count 30 days, that's Rosh Chodesh of Adar Bet, and then I know when Purim is in Adar Bet. So that's why they don't have to. Rabbi follows Rashbag that says it's variable. Now, what does this word Chodesh mean? So 30, we know how to count to 30. Chodesh nami adai. Chodesh, assuming that right now we're assuming it means just 29 days. So it's the same thing. Just count 29 and you'll know when it is. Why would you have to send out messengers? Amar papa manda amar Chodesh, rasa Chodesh, rasa Shiloshim. When Rashbag says Chodesh, what he means is whatever they decide. When they decide to add a month, they can decide to add 29 days or 30 days. And since it's not known, therefore, you would have to send out messengers. And that's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. Okay. Ha'ed Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi mishum kehalak kedushat Yerushalayim al shene adarim shemekadeshin otam biyom ayburehen. Okay, we have a few different opinions about Adar Aleph and Adar Bet, how long they are. And here we have this testimony from the holy community in Yerushalayim, that whenever you have two Adars, that you make a Rosh Chodesh on the day that would be their pregnancy. Pregnancy means a 30 day month. In other words, both are 29 days. Whenever you get to 30, you say that's Rosh Chodesh. When you get to the next 30, don't make it 30, make it Rosh Chodesh instead. So therefore, you see, those are both shorter months. Okay, and that's one opinion. Now, the lemema de chaserin avdinan melein lo avdin. So this would seem to mean that you should make them short months and not long months. Yeah, that's what it means. And they disagreed. These elders of this community of Jerusalem disagreed. La puke me de derash Rav Nachman bar Chista ha'id. Rav Simai Mishum Chagai, Zecharia, Umalachi, Al Shene Adarim, Sheim Rasu, La Soshenhen Milein Osin, Shenen Chaserin Osin, Had Malev, Had Chaser Osin, Bekat Hayun Hagin, Bagola. Okay, we thought we had a good source here because we had this, this great holy community of Yerushalayim. They said both 29 days. But here we have an even greater authority, right, that said, Rabbi Simai testified in the name of the last prophets of Israel. Well, I don't know. Prophets don't always, we don't usually follow halachalic prophets anyway. But anyway, they did say that whenever there's two Adars, it's up to you, whatever you want. You can decide to make them 30-30, 29-29, or 29-30, 30-29. And in fact, in the Gola, when in Bavel, when they declared the new moons there, when they decided the calendar there, they did that. They did that, in fact. Mishum Rabbeinu amru le'olam echad maleh v'echad chaser ad she'ivada lecha shugvar Rosh Chodesh bizmano. And the third opinion says that it's always maleh and then chaser. It should always be 30 and then 29. That's the standard. Unless you hear for sure that the first one is bizmano, the first one is 29, and then the next one may be, then it will be different. But otherwise, it's always 30 and 29. Okay, so that's a whole bunch of different opinions about two Adars in a row. And we'll see more about this on the next daf. Baruch Adonai Le'olam. Amen ve'amen.